When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the NBA media rights deals have officially been announced, but that's not likely to be the end of this story. Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Well, it happened finally Wednesday, July 24, 2024, a day that will live in sports media history because the NBA has finally announced its new 11-year media rights deals with Comcast, Disney, and Amazon that will bring the NBA back to NBC, extend ESPN's NBA coverage to a whopping 34 consecutive years, and bring in Amazon Prime Video for the first time as well. But all of this, of course, is contingent on WBD, Warner Brothers Discovery. Very shortly before the NBA announced the deals on Wednesday, maybe within a half hour of that announcement, the NBA said that it was rejecting Warner Brothers Discovery's attempt to match Amazon's package. Now, earlier this week on Monday, WBD said it would try to match Amazon for the C package, the cheapest of all the packages. And the NBA accepted that proposal, reviewed it, and said no. Now, according to Andrew Marchand of The Athletic, TNT would have been involved in this C package proposal by Warner Brothers Discovery. That is a problem because this is supposed to be a streaming-only deal. The NBA is not just saying now, hey, it's a streaming-only deal to keep WBD out. The NBA has been saying since before any of this happened, before the exclusive negotiating window, the NBA has been saying, we want a third deal that will be for streaming. You can't match a streaming deal with linear cable, right? And so what WBD is trying to do is to, you know, basically, I don't really know what WBD is trying to do, actually. I don't. Their logic is that because the Amazon deal includes rights that currently belong to TNT, that they have the right to match in that instance. But I just don't see the argument. First of all, from the very beginning, nobody thought WBD was going to even try to match Amazon. From the very beginning, it was, oh, well, wow, Comcast has bid so much, there's no way WBD can match Comcast. And that was the thought, that that would be the only option. The Amazon deal is a third deal. It's entirely new. The NBC deal, the Comcast deal, has a lot more in common with what WBD currently owns. From the All-Star Game to Opening Night to Martin Luther King Day, it's Turner's package. Now, Amazon does have a little bit of what Turner has had, with Thursday night doubleheaders and some portion of the NBA in-season tournament and some portion of the play-in tournament. But, I mean, come on. That's compared to what Comcast has, Amazon is not the spiritual successor of TNT. So I don't know how WBD expects to win a challenge. I don't really think that they actually do expect to win in the courts. But they have said, and I want to quote them directly here, this was the statement by WBD after the deals were announced and after the NBA announced that it was rejecting WBD's match. The statement says, we have matched the Amazon offer. We have a contractual right to do so and do not believe the NBA can reject it. In doing so, they are rejecting the many fans who continue to show their unwavering support for our best-in-class coverage delivered through the full combined reach of WBD's video-first distribution platforms, including TNT, home to our four-decade partnership with the league, and Max, our leading streaming service. We think they have grossly misinterpreted our contractual rights with respect to the 25-26 season and beyond, and we will take appropriate action. And then, of course, we look forward to another season of the NBA on TNT. I think, obviously, WBD is not going to succeed here. One, you know, they're going populist here. They're going populist because a lot of fans don't understand sports TV, right? They are rejecting the many fans who love the NBA on TNT. One, I love the NBA on TNT. I've been watching since before Charles got there. I remember the night Charles got hurt in Philadelphia. That was a TNT night. The game wasn't on TNT, but I remember Ernie cutting in to announce that Charles had gotten injured, and it was obviously a career-ending injury that night. I love the NBA on TNT. It's better than anything that ESPN has ever done, and their studio show is better than anything NBC did in its iteration from 1990 to 2002. They've got great announcers. Obviously, the studio team is amazing, and all of that can be done on other networks. All of it, right? Obviously, Harlan and Eagle are probably going to go to other networks. They're probably going to go to Amazon. Whether or not WBD is involved in the Amazon production, they're probably going there. Charles says he'll retire. Ernie actually hasn't said anything, but people keep saying that Ernie has said that he will not move with the rights. But, you know, look, if it's not EJ, Kenny, and Charles anymore, that's sad. But a lot of what TNT does is going to continue down the line. And Drew, I've filibustered long enough. I'll bring you in.
Oh, totally fine, John. I want to kind of give the counterpoints here from the NBA, who I actually believe at least told some of the media the reasons why they rejected WBD's proposal before the WBD statement was released. And this is from Andrew Marchand of The Athletic. First, TNT wanted to put all of its games on its cable network, as you just discussed, in addition to putting them on Max, whereas the Amazon deal was just a streaming deal. Second, the NBA believes that Amazon has far greater reach than Max. Also true, it's about a 2-to-1 subscriber difference there. Third, Amazon offered to pay in full for its first 3 years. Warner Brothers Discovery provided a 3-year line of credit. That is much different, probably in a court of law, you'd have to imagine. Amazon's first 3 years going into escrow, Warner Brothers Discovery, all would be in credit. So that is, that's a huge difference, financially speaking, for the league. It seems like that three-pronged argument would be a pretty strong one in a court of law. Of course, Warner Brothers Discovery, like you said, going populist, this is just lip service, right? This is to gin up a bit of outrage and hope that they can get, you know, some fans on their side, behave emotionally. I don't think this strategy will work, but it might make it uncomfortable enough where the NBA decides to try to settle this quicker than they would have otherwise, if there wasn't such a fuss being made.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. Like you said, I don't think WBD has a leg to stand on. The unmitigated gall of saying, we're not going to pay that kind of money. Then you lose your package. And then you say, okay, we'll take the streaming package, but put all the games on linear cable, this dying medium that the NBA desperately wants to escape. I mean, what is this? I mean, what were they thinking? You know, to me, this is Costanza level. Okay. I mean, this is that's what this is. Zaslav is Costanza. The NBA WBD could have avoided all of this just by paying a couple $100 million more per year. They were already willing to pay $2.1 billion. That's a massive number. And, you know, if they're saying 2.3, you make a bet. You say, well, I don't think you're going to get $2.3 billion from anybody else. So you'll come back to us with 2.1. Well, instead, Comcast said 2.5.
An interesting detail, and I don't know if you saw this also from Andrew Marchand, was that Amazon was actually let in onto the exclusive negotiating window for the so-called C package, during the time where it was supposedly just ESPN and Turner negotiating with the league. This just kind of disassembles Warner Brothers Discovery's argument, on its face, right? You know, clearly, as you mentioned, NBC is kind of the spiritual successor to the TNT package, right? Them allowing Amazon to come in for the C package in the time period where it's just them and ESPN negotiating with the league, to me, that says it all. That says We plan on maintaining, most of the inventory that we have, beating out NBC for their package. They had no intention of bidding on this C package until it was convenient for them from a legal standpoint, when it became clear that they were not going to retain that package that is now going to belong to NBC.
That's an excellent point. I mean, the fact is that, WBD would know that this was intended to be an additional separate package, right? One, Amazon's rights to the in-season tournament and play-in are not anything that was negotiated in that 2014 deal. They didn't exist. Those games did not exist. So just because TNT was airing them doesn't mean that WBD agreed as part of that existing 2014 contract to include those games. So that's one. Two, you say, well, what about our Thursday doubleheaders? I mean, okay, TNT, half their season airs on Tuesdays now anyway, right? And the reality is that, yeah, I guess you could say that the Thursday rights are TNT's games. But to me, that's really the only argument that they have to say that Amazon is taking something from them. So look, I think we all expect WBD to lose if they take it as far as the courts, and I don't know what they're going to get. There's been a lot of talk of a settlement between the NBA and WBD, and some of the talk has been that WBD would maybe get to run Amazon's production, which would be the best case scenario for everyone involved, because he would get the high quality of WBD's or TNT's. When I say WBD, I'm like, it's like Zaslav. Zaslav has nothing to do with what has made the NBA and TNT great, right? The WBD folks kind of just came in and took over an operation that was working really well before they got there. And the folks that made that operation work really well before they got there, they are extremely valuable to have running an NBA broadcast. Amazon's NBA coverage, what exactly are they going to rely on? They have no infrastructure. They don't even have really any sports infrastructure because Thursday Night Football, I mean, are these even really Amazon employees as opposed to people brought in from other networks? So look, that's the best case scenario. WBD comes in, they run Amazon's broadcast, Zaslav gets some money, and the NBA gets to have at least a bit of continuity that frankly they're going to have anyway. I don't see any universe where some of these TNT folks don't go to Amazon. Some might go to NBC, but that's the best case. A financial settlement would be good if you're WBD as well. But if I'm the NBA, I'm not paying $100 million, $1 billion because of some ridiculous clause inserted in the deal 20 years ago that I don't even necessarily think that WBD is adequately exercising. The NBA might not be amenable to that.
Well, this will all be solved in some smoke-filled rooms with a bunch of lawyers, and it'll be interesting to see how it is resolved. I do agree with you that the best case for the fans and for all parties involved, maybe it would be for Turner to produce those Amazon games.
One possible thing, I mean, I kind of talked about this in an article I wrote this week. There are other rights that the NBA still has available that are not part of this deal. One of them I would have thought would have been the USA basketball games, but those have actually been spoken for. Those are going to NBC. Those have been airing on Fox this year, and Fox has done a great job. I enjoy Raftery, Adam Amin, Gus Johnston, Jason Benetti, but Fox airing basketball makes no sense, and those games are going to NBC. The WNBA has two packages left over that it could sell. I speculated last week that WBD maybe could be in line for one of those. I think I was wrong. Ultimately, be very confident that CBS and ION are going to retain those two additional packages. The WNBA would thus keep all of its existing partners and add NBC on top of that. That's what I think will happen there. But there's still additional inventory, maybe. I mean, I have not pored through these contracts the way I'd like. I know that there's Sky Sports for the NBC package. I know that there's Amazon, obviously, internationally, but maybe there's some room for some international rights for Discovery. Warner Brothers Discovery has an entire international, you know, business in terms of sports media that Discovery created. This is not the Turner side of it. And maybe there's some international rights that could accrue to Discovery internationally, which would still be the NBA on TNT because that's still TNT Sports. So maybe that could be something. And then, you know, look, I mean, I think the NBA pretty much locked up everything. I mean, G League, Summer League, the draft, obviously, everything got spoken for, man. There's, the only thing that I can think is that maybe there's a little international rights. Like you say, fourth package. Fourth package of what? I know Mark Cuban had a suggestion, Drew, that you would want to bring up.
Yeah, so Mark Cuban had an interesting tweet the other day about how possibly an option for Warner Brothers Discovery would be, should Diamond Sports, fail to, emerge from their bankruptcy proceedings, WBD could perhaps, take up those 10 to 15 markets, those local packages of NBA rights, and broadcast them on TNT. You know, to me, I think there's several reasons why this would not work. But John, what did you think of that proposal?
Yeah, it's a little bit impractical because TNT is a national network. And so trying to fit local rights into that, I don't know how that would work, really. The other thing, too, the whole point of all of this is keeping TNT from collapsing with distributors, and having, 50 New Orleans Pelicans games isn't going to do it. Right. So to me, I think it's an interesting idea, and it's Mark Cuban. And Mark is no longer a majority owner in the NBA, but I'm sure he still has pull. He still hears things. He's still part of the conversation. So maybe that's something folks are talking about. You will notice, by the way, there's no local rights in this deal. None. And that was something that had been rumored from the start. There was a report that maybe I misinterpreted, but there was a report by John Arand, a million years ago at the start of this negotiation, that Amazon's deal would include a full night of NBA games where it aired every single game. Remember that?
I do.
Maybe I misinterpreted what Orand was reporting with that. But I don't think I did. I mean, I'm going to give myself enough credit there. So maybe that was something that fell out of the negotiation, something that they were considering and they kind of put aside. Orand did say back in whatever month it was, whenever this happened, 3 months ago, that Amazon would get exclusive access to a full night of NBA games each week of the season. And that does not appear, one, it was never mentioned again. And two, that does not appear to be the case in the announcement. So maybe some of those local rights, have, and there was nothing about League Pass, really. I mean, well, I shouldn't say nothing. Amazon will have NBA League Pass, but it already does.
I want to make one more point on, the international side of things real quick, and then kind of, refocus us and look outside kind of the WBD context here and onto the greater package. So it looks like all three partners will have some level of international rights, which means probably most of them, at least most of the valuable ones, are taken up. ESPN is getting, markets in Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, Oceania, the Netherlands. NBC Universal is getting, as you said, those Sky Sports markets in Europe, as well as some of the Caribbean and Sub-Saharan Africa. And then Amazon will have their package of games in Mexico, Brazil, France, Italy, Spain. You know, it seems like a lot of the international markets are accounted for. And that being said, who knows? Maybe there is room for Discovery to kind of come in and carve something out there, but it's probably not a desirable outcome for the NBA.
No, there's no desirable outcome that involves the NBA still being in business with David Zaslav and WBD. The NBA doesn't want to be with WBD. I mentioned Costanza earlier. I'll mention another Costanza reference, and I actually have used this in a podcast before, but there's no problem mentioning the same Seinfeld episode twice. There's an episode of Seinfeld when George is trying to break up with a woman, and she says, "No, I reject the breakup. We are still together." And George has to go through all of this, you know, trouble trying to get rid of this relationship. And of course, being Seinfeld, he ends up with another girlfriend that he's trying to have an affair with, who also rejects his breakup. And the two of them are like working in cahoots to prevent him from moving on. That's kind of where WBD is at this point, right? The NBA doesn't want to be with them, and the NBA is going to have to do something painful. I mean, look, it doesn't have to necessarily be painful. Because if it ends up with WBD running Amazon's production of the NBA, that's best case by a wide margin. That's basically you keep what makes TNT special for the fans while also, you know, being in business with a much better company, Amazon, than WBD is. That's like the golden scenario. But it might have to be something more painful, like just paying WBD or going through a legal proceeding, which seems unlikely, but who knows? Yeah.
Let's look outside of, you know, WBD being iced out of these deals and on to, you know, what is actually happening here. Did anything in particular catch your eye, you know, new details that hadn't been reported yet from any of the new partners or in Disney's case, a returning partner?
Well, I mean, look, I am very intrigued by the split between NBC and Peacock in the playoffs specifically. So NBC is going to air 50 games in the regular season, really 55. The NBA says we're going to have 75 games on over-the-air television. That is humongous for the NBA from a ratings perspective. It's just massive. As a proponent of broadcast television, to see the NBA back on broadcast like this, it far in excess of anything the league has ever had. And by the way, more games on ABC as well. ABC has 20 games compared to, well, not just 20. ABC has at least 20. The minimum is 20 for ABC compared to a minimum of 15. I know ABC aired like 23 or 24 games this year, but some of that was because of the strike and some additional broadcasts that were a result of that. So the 20 on ABC plus about 55 on NBC, that's golden. But I was very interested about that playoff inventory in NBC. The NBC networks get 28 games in the playoffs in their first two rounds, and only 14 of them are guaranteed to air on NBC. I mean, fully half of NBC's playoff games could air on Peacock. 14 games on Peacock? That's like 14 games on NBA TV. I don't know how in the world the NBA allowed that to happen. You know, I mean, like at a certain point, you got to say, no, we're not putting 14 playoff games on Peacock. You're crazy. Like, how did they allow that to happen? Because, I mean, look, I think NBC will probably air more than 14, but you'd better make sure your minimum for broadcast television is a heck of a lot higher than 14 out of 28. So that jumped out to me. The two things that jumped out to me, the increased inventory on ABC, especially relative to ESPN. ESPN is only going to have 60 games in this deal in the regular season. So yeah, look, I was definitely interested in the increased number of games on ABC and also the high number of potential games on Peacock. That was surprising to me. I guess for the NBA, you know, if you're NBC, you probably thought you were going to get in the finals rotation with this deal. So maybe getting all those extra Peacock games is a little bit of a, you know, consolation prize there. But yeah, that's entirely too much Peacock. Entirely too much. And first of all, 50 regular season games on Peacock, that's almost as much as Prime Video was getting, which is 66. So I don't know.
But that's what happens when you know, pay as much as NBC is paying for this deal. You have that leverage.
Exactly. And let me just
Cut you off.
No, you didn't cut me off. I cut you off. Before I let you get in, I just wanted to quickly note the hierarchy. Broadcast television, 75 games. Direct-to-subscriber, at least 100. Cable, ESPN, 60 in the regular season, and then some share of 25 in the playoffs. That'd be 18 in the first two rounds, and then up to 7 in the conference finals. that's a big deal. Cable is the rump of this contract. And cable was everything for the NBA for 20 years. And now cable is the third place finisher. And that's very interesting to me. And if all of these games are available to watch on, say, ESPN Plus, now all these games will be available on ESPN's direct-to-subscriber platform. But that's going to be super expensive compared to ESPN Plus, which begs the question of whether ESPN Plus will continue to exist, obviously. But that, to me, says a lot about what the NBA's angle was with this deal. The NBA had a specific vision with this contract, and that was we are leaving cable behind. If we have to be on cable, we'll be on only ESPN and for a relatively limited amount of games.
Yeah, interesting point you brought up there. ESPN Plus not mentioned in either the NBA's press release or Disney's press release. So that might be some writing on the wall for that service. John, what stood out to me about these new deals is that every night of the week is accounted for in some way. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There are national windows on all of those days. Now, of course, some of those don't start until after the football season's over. But there will be parts of the season where there's an NBA national game on every single day of the week. I think that's a great strategy from the league. Some of those will be like Peacock exclusive or, you know, on Prime Video. But, you know, nonetheless, if you're an NBA fan that, you know, doesn't have access to, an RSN or doesn't follow one specific team, you're going to have a lot of options to view the league. This is very, very accessible to the average fan. And I think a lot of that is because they are ditching cable. Like you said, third in the hierarchy. There's just so many ways to view these games now. And you're going to get it most nights of the week.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes multiple games on the same day on different networks. Sundays, ABC in the afternoon, NBC at night. Saturdays, Amazon in the afternoon, ABC at night. How are they going to divvy these games up? How are they going to do it? There's 30 teams in the league. I think there'll be 32, maybe not by year one of this deal, but very soon. Frankly, the league is probably going to need to get to like 36. And I'm not really kidding because they got to fill airtime. They got to fill airtime. All right. And so the other thing, too, is if you're going to have an 11 o'clock game on NBC every Tuesday, you'd better get some more West Coast teams. And I don't just mean Seattle. I mean Seattle and Vegas and Vancouver. You know, you got to have some teams to fill that 11 o'clock window.
And if you're going to have 10 teams in each conference make the playoffs, it's time to have 36 teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think the league needs to expand beyond just the two. So, I mean, how are they going to fill the airtime? What happens right now in 2023, 24, LeBron James, Steph Curry, those are the draws in the NBA, right? I mean, other teams will draw occasionally, but like, you know, the marquee teams that move the needle, there's not that many of them. Now that's, you know, immaterial in a lot of ways because this deal was based on the NBA's floor, not its ceiling. But you got to have, there's not enough marquee games to fill this number of windows, which is an amazing thing for the league, but also kind of not necessarily a problem, a good problem to have, but certainly something that's going to be complicated. And what's the hierarchy, by the way? On a Sunday night, well, I'm sure NBC gets the top game and ABC gets whatever's left over. On a Saturday night, ABC gets the top game, Amazon gets what's left over. And then what about Fridays? Amazon has Friday doubleheaders, but ESPN also has some Fridays. How does that work? How in the world is that going to work? You know, are there going to be nights when Amazon and ESPN are airing competing games? I mean, is that going to happen? Are there going to be nights when Amazon goes dark? You know, I mean, there's just all sorts of different questions that still need to be answered. But for $77 billion, I'm sure they'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if there's certain packages and certain games that kind of get overlooked. Like if you're, you know, the Tuesday Peacock package, you know, how many people are really going to be seeking that out?
Right. Monday night for Peacock, but yeah.
Sorry, yes, yeah. So, I mean, the point stands. Monday for Peacock. It kind of, it's shades of the Apple TV baseball deal to me, or Apple TV MLB deal. How many people are really actively going to Apple TV to watch some random regular season MLB game that doesn't really involve their team? So we'll see if these are actually successful ventures. But I think, you know, the NBA, like you said, they've proven that they have the floor. I can't remember the exact figure from your piece about a month ago now, but, you know, over 200 games, national window games that draw over a million viewers, that average over a million viewers per regular season in the NBA. That's unprecedented, you know, across all sports. You know, really the only thing comparable is college football.
And so, I'm sure the NBA has beaten college football by now with these additional WNBA games.
Exactly. So if you're able to pull those kinds of numbers for 9 months out of the year, if you can even get, you know, a decent chunk of that to go over and subscribe to Peacock and watch those Monday night games, then it's worth it if you're NBC. So a lot of questions with these new deals, but it'll be exciting to see how this new strategy works for the NBA.
Yeah. A couple more things. NBC reportedly, according to Richard Deitch of The Athletic, plans to use Mike Tirico as its top NBA voice. Obviously a smart move, although I would have put, and maybe I'm crazy, I would have put Tirico in the studio and Noah Eagle as the number one. I know nepotism, yada, yada. The whole industry is filled with nepotism. But I think you want to have a really strong studio host. And, you know, I know they've got other studio hosts at NBC, but to me, I look at Tirico as the Costas of this generation. The NBA and NBC, it was Bob Costas in the 90s. Tirico, to me, is the heir.
Sure. I just think you have such a clear role for Maria Taylor when it comes to the NBA studio at NBC. Tirico is a guy that can do anything, so I think he'll still be great lead play-by-play. And there will be plenty of time for Noah Eagle to rise in the ranks. Tirico won't be here forever. You know, he's still got a lot of good years left in him, but Noah Eagle's 27 years old. So his time will come.
To me, I look at Tirico as that Costas ear. But, you know, hey, Tirico as play-by-play is, honest to God, I'm going to just say it, Mike is so good on Sunday Night Football. He's so good on Sunday Night Football. I do actually believe he's better in the studio than on play-by-play, just like Bob Costas, where Bob was excellent on play-by-play, but better in the studio. That's maybe I'm way off on that, but this is kind of the way that I've looked at it. You know, Noah's 27, but you go from 27 to 45 real quick in this industry. I remember Spiro Dedas calling NBA playoff games nationally when he was 24 years old with the late, great Steve Snapper Jones. And they were using Round Ball Rock on those games on NBA TV all the way back then. You know, he still hasn't called like a game beyond the second round. So it goes quickly. Look, hey, Noah will get his opportunities on like the Super Bowl at some point, I'm sure. But I did think that would have been the way to go.
Yeah, fair enough. But I just think it makes too much sense. You know, Tirico in the lead seat, Maria Taylor as host, Noah Eagle, a very, very good number two. You know, maybe in 2034, when NBC is still airing these games, Noah Eagle will be the lead guy by then.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One thing I do want to note, John, it's another little detail that was in the press release. It looks like Amazon, you know, probably as people would have assumed, won't get their first conference finals until 2026-27. So NBC will be first up in that rotation. I guess that means ESPN will also get in on that first year. They will have 1 year, as has been reported, that they will not have the conference final. So that was a little detail that was in the press release there. Anything else that stood out to you, John?
Well, let's just go with all the details here. Summer League will be on Prime and ESPN. I assume Prime will take the Summer League games that aired on NBA TV, and ESPN will keep its own Summer League games. There's obviously the draft stays with ESPN. You know, there's obviously the WNBA. Let's just be totally transparent. This is a updated version of the podcast. We taped on Tuesday morning as usual, and we went into detail on the WNBA. Maybe we can still cut in some segments of that which we recorded yesterday. But for the WNBA, a finals rotation now. ESPN, Amazon gets some, NBC gets some. And it's unfortunate that the WNBA is the one that gets to have the rotation for the finals, because certainly the NBA could really use one. But Amazon having the WNBA finals is going to be fascinating, because I really don't know if Amazon's going to have their games rated. I really don't know. I don't think Peacock will, because Peacock has no incentive to. They're not airing enough big games. Look, being Nielsen rated isn't actually great outside of obviously the importance of selling the advertising. But from the standpoint of, if you want people to not pay attention to how bad your numbers are, don't you think Fox Sports 1, which is Undisputed, was not Nielsen rated? Boy, man, they must regret that Undisputed is rated, right? Because look, when it comes down to it, there's going to be a lot of attention paid to the viewership for these games. I just don't think there's any incentive, because it's not like they're not going to be able to sell advertising, right? They're going to be able to sell advertising. I don't know what the there's a ton of incentive for NBC to have the Peacock games rated. It's not the NFL. It's not going to be 20 million viewers. And ultimately, you can also, you know, include the Peacock games in any deal you do for the NBC broadcast network, especially since all the NBC games are going to be simulcast on Peacock anyway. But yeah, I mean, look, when all is said and done, there's just so much inventory. There's so much accounted for. Everything is accounted for. Everything. They didn't leave a morsel outside of those two other WNBA deals, which my understanding is they are spoken for. That would be CBS and ION. Everything is locked up till 2036. The money is unbelievable. We've allowed the money to no longer phase us, but $77 billion. I would never have thought at the start of this that the NBA was going to get that. If you read my article from the beginning of this, I was talking about the NBA getting, you know, $1.6 billion from TNT or something. I mean, that was kind of my mindset. The NBA, from a ratings perspective, we've talked obviously about the floor, but that ceiling is not very impressive right now. So to get $77 billion, let's not forget that that is still a wow proposition.
All right, as you said, John, we recorded some other parts of the podcast yesterday. I think this WNBA portion holds up just as well today. So we will go ahead and play the remainder of this podcast for you all.
I want to say I wrote a big piece about the WNBA's media rights deal on Sunday. So a couple of things. One, the money that the WNBA is going to be making is on top of the NBA rights deal. So the NBA rights deal is $75 billion, and then $77 billion when you add in the WNBA. So it's not carved out. There is an opening, because it's an 11-year deal. Now, for the WNBA in 11 years, it's not going to be the WNBA today. If it is, it will have failed miserably. There's going to be some significant growth, you would think, if everything that we've seen from the first half of this season plays out the way people expect. So the NBA and WNBA will be able to revisit the rights fee in 3 years. This is not an opt-out like the NFL has. This is not going to be where it's going to go to the open market. But the NBA, WNBA, and its partners in 3 years after 2028 can discuss what that rights fee should look like, a revaluation of the rights. I don't know what to make of that, because ultimately, without the threat of losing rights, what is your incentive to pay what the market value is? So to me, I still don't see that being a real solution to the problem of the rights being open for so long. And by the way, after year three, there's still 8 more years left, assuming there's no opt-out of the deal overall. So the league could still grow beyond what that revaluation would call for. Maybe there'll be a second revaluation down the line. I don't know. But to me, the best solution to the WNBA issue is for the WNBA deal to be of a different length overall, and the league can go right back out to the open market. Now, the WNBA will never have it as good as it does right now in terms of the open market, because you go to market in 2028, NFL and, you know, baseball, hockey, I mean, that's going to be dangerous. So I do kind of get it, but I also think that for the WNBA, it's going to be very difficult to capitalize, even with that revaluation after 3 years, on the potential growth that could be ahead.
Yeah, it seems like that type of clause would, you know, require, you know, some sort of arbitration, you know, in order to even make it like reasonable to put it into the contract. Because, like you said, why would any of the media partners have any incentive to tell the WNBA, oh, well, you know, yeah, we'll pay more, right, for the next 8 years? That doesn't make sense. You know, these media companies are probably getting a great deal if they actually do get to air the WNBA through the end of these 11-year contracts. That is going to look like a huge bargain if the WNBA stays on its current trajectory. You know, I guess we'll see in 3 years whether or not the WNBA is actually able to leverage that revaluation period in the contracts.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small league even now. Now, I want to be clear, the viewership is tremendous this season. I mean, the growth is unbelievable. Ion is at 579,000 viewers per game this year. That doesn't sound like a lot, but last year they were at 277,000. So that's a big, big leap. CBS is averaging 1.23 million viewers. That's obviously more than double last year. These are great numbers. They are. I mean, when I say great numbers, I don't just mean for the WNBA. I mean, like, they are normal-looking sports numbers. Obviously, the numbers are still not quite at the level of an NBA and a baseball, you know, but these are representative figures that you can more than survive on. And it makes sense that, you know, the WNBA's current partners want to keep it. I mean, if you're CBS, you're just getting a few extra seven-figure audiences, you know, out of nowhere. So, I think the league is in good position. It's not in good position to capitalize the way that it probably should. But I will say, this is not a circumstance where the NBA just arbitrarily said, give them $200 million. There has been an effort for these rights, for the WNBA's rights, to exceed what the league could have gotten on the open market. My understanding is that these rights are not picked out of the air, but that there was an analysis done to determine what the WNBA could get on the open market, and that this figure, $200 million a year, exceeds that currently. I don't think Daryl Miller said it was a low ball. It's a low ball in 3 or 4 or 5 years. Definitely a low ball in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Massive low ball in that period of time. But right now, I don't think it is. I think it's right where you would expect a league that spent, you know, 16 years kind of in the cellar and is now rising out of it dramatically, kind of where you would expect. There's still an element of prove it long term, I think.
100%. If you're a sports media executive, you know, buying WNBA rights, you can't just go off half a season worth of ratings data, right? You have to know that this is a long term, you know, growth property. I think me and you both would say it is, but it's still, there is an aspect of prove it. Is Caitlin Clark just a flash in the pan, or is this actually lifting the league up as a whole? I think the numbers this season are pretty indicative that this is true growth, not just a flash in the pan. But that's a question that will only be answered several years down the line. So reasonable, I think, to get the overpay now, but when you're locking it in long term, it will eventually be probably a substantial underpay.
Yeah, it's going to be a bad deal in 2036, really, regardless of what that revaluation comes up with, because even compared to 2028, that 2036 WNBA, assuming the league grows the way that it should, would be much bigger than, and plus, beyond anything else, forget the WNBA's growth. Just generally, everybody else's growth is going to get to a point where 200 million a year is, even if it grows to 400 million in that revaluation, right? That's going to be a tiny, tiny number, right? And you always got to be careful with how long these deals go. Because like I said in my article, the NHL did 200 million a year with NBC. That was a terrible deal. Because even up to now, the NHL, you would agree. I don't know, maybe you wouldn't agree. That should be a billion a year at least, right? In the US. I mean, the NHL, yeah. I mean, given the amount of inventory, given how well the games do, I mean, 1 billion a year, come on. And they're still in the nine figures. So to me, when you have a long-term deal like that, and it's not massive like the NBA's, I mean, even the NFL is lucky they put in that out clause. Because if the NFL hadn't put in that out clause after 7 years, they'd be really like very rueful, okay? I mean, about that contract, which seemed so massive a few years ago.
Yeah, I'm sure even, you know, looking at this NBA deal get done, they probably wish they had bumped that opt-out up a few years, you know, maybe in 2025-26 time frame. This seems to be like the best time to have a massive sports media property, just given all of the potential suitors. You're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the cable bidders. You're getting the broadcasters. You're getting the streamers. There's a lot out there that would like to pay. John, I think we got one more topic on the rundown for this week, and that would be the Olympics. The opening ceremony this Friday on NBC. We'll get the games underway in earnest. Of course, there's always some sort of you know, competition before the opening ceremonies. You know, I think soccer starts and maybe a few other sports. But of course, this is a big time of year for NBC. This is also the first time we've had, you know, kind of a more favorable time zone for the American audience in the Olympics. Not entirely favorable, but definitely doable with this in Paris versus, you know, some of the previous Olympics being over in Asia. So, John, what is your kind of top line thoughts going into the 2024 Paris Games from a viewership perspective?
I have no clue. I think it's going to be a real wild card. NBC has all of these events on in the afternoon, and I don't know if that's going to be good for ratings. It'll be good for the daytime ratings, but obviously NBC is de-emphasizing the primetime window as a place for live sports, as an event window. It's more like a show. Well, I think the potential exists for a pretty steep decline in viewership for that, because NBC can say all it wants about people tuning in for the stories. People do tune in for the events. Now, I will say the Olympics is not a traditional sporting event in that way. It is not the normal sports audience. It's an audience that includes a lot of people who don't typically watch sports and watch more entertainment shows. So it might be a good bet. I applaud NBC for doing this, because I do think that it could be a sacrifice scenario, because putting live swimming on at 3 o'clock, live track and field on at 3 o'clock, man, I don't know if you can get the audience for that you could get if it was in prime time. But obviously, they'd have to air on tape delay in prime time. The only other option would be that NBC streams them on Peacock and then airs them on TV at night. And frankly, this is a better choice.
This is better for the viewer, no doubt. What was surprising to me is that NBC opted to do this because they could have put everything behind a paywall on Peacock. Right. Of course, everything's behind a paywall if you're watching a cable channel. Right. So any sports that won't be on NBC that are going to be on USA or CNBC or E or any of the other, you know, networks that NBC decides to preempt programming on for Olympic events, you know, that is still behind a paywall. But in any case, you know, I think you're right. I'm very excited for this year's Olympics because of that. You know, I think last Summer Olympics in 2021, that was the first time I probably had a Peacock subscription. So I also was, you know, viewing all the sports live and didn't really tune into the primetime programming for that reason. I think there's several different Olympic viewers, John. I think there are the types of people that primarily tune in for that narrative storytelling, those primetime broadcasts. That's probably maybe a bit of an older audience, less sports focused, more entertainment programming. And then you have people that are just interested in the live events. So that might be someone that is more apt to, you know, purchase a Peacock subscription for the games and watch the events live. So I think NBC with the strategy is able to appeal to, you know, multiple different types of Olympic viewers. I think in the earnings call today, they said that Peacock subscriptions were down by about 500,000 subscribers. I would expect that in their next quarter earnings call, that's going to shoot way back up with the Olympics and, you know, with NFL season right around the corner. I imagine those numbers will rebound. I believe they're also raising the price by $1 a month,
yeah,
if I'm correct.
I think $2. $2. They're raising it by something. Look, when all is said and done, trying to make the Olympics kind of, you know, trying to broadcast the Olympics like it's still 1996 or 2000 or even 2012 isn't going to work anymore. So you got to take the plunge. For NBC, that means putting the games on or the events on live on over the air. And, you know, better to do it now in 24 and then have that system in place for 28. And then hopefully you can benefit from the Los Angeles, you know, from the fact that it'll be in the U.S.
It'll, I'm sure, be a hard comparison between previous Olympics and this go around, given the programming strategy. It's always a tough comparison with the different time zones. I think if you look at probably total day and total prime time, overall, NBC will find a way to publish a favorable press release on how many people are watching this year's games.
Easy to do. Just say we're up X amount in daytime and make no mention of prime time, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, John. Great podcast today. Glad we could cover these NBA deals as they broke. Why don't you close us out and tee us up for next week?
Yeah, there's so much in these NBA deals, even beyond what was already reported, that I don't even think we got to everything. There's a new ESPN whip-around show that I guess will replace NBA Crunch Time. ESPN had a whip-around show before, back in the 2002 deal called NBA Fast Break Tuesday. Some people might remember that, although probably not a lot. So they'll have that. I don't know. To me, honest to God, I would have sold that to someone that I don't have a deal with. A whip-around show, you know, maybe the networks wouldn't have been pleased, but I was thinking that would be pretty good for Scripps or something. Scripps or Nexstar, you know, put a whip around show on over the air TV for one of those networks that needs programming. You know, I mean, I don't think it needed to be included in the overall deal. I doubt ESPN would have paid less. So that to me was a bit of a missed opportunity. I would also say I noticed in ESPN's press release they're calling NBA Saturday primetime the national game of the week. Yeah, right. Sunday night on NBC, my friend, is going to be the game of the week. I mean, it's, you know, you can't compare Sunday night on over-the-air TV to Saturday night. You just can't. And ABC is going to, even though it has the finals and an increased lineup, ABC is going to very quickly take a backseat to NBC. Because after all these years, ABC is still giving you Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. NBC is giving you prime time two nights a week. NBC is the broadcast network of record for the NBA when this deal begins. But there's so much more to talk about with the NBA media rights. We'll talk about more of it, I'm sure, next week. The Olympics is also starting, and we'll talk about that as well on the Sports Media Watch podcast. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.